football on off the ball.
Yeah, I've just been told that we've broken a few records tonight, which is nice, and I'm delighted for the players, because as sloppy as we were last week, they were excellent tonight. We really were. They controlled the tempo, the energy in the game.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Word on the street on Off the Ball.
With Braeburn. Whatever the weather, Braeburn Coffee has you covered.
Made for your summer.
Hello, hello, and welcome along to Word on the Street, Da Classica.
There we go. It's yeah, way well. Better.
I will preface this by saying I was in the throes of a fever.
Well, I always think it's like the death of football, funeral bell.
This is probably the worst recency bias of all time.
I say Boxing Day.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Eve.
Is there a problem? Absolutely. Is it shite? Absolutely. Will you watch it? Absolutely.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Word on the Street. It's episode 58. And this summer, Word on the Street on Off the Ball is brought to you by Braeburn, from refreshing iced mochas to smooth iced oat lattes. Whatever the weather, Braeburn Coffee has you covered, made for your summer. We have an exciting show coming up today. We have, obviously, I'm here, Rachel and Susanna are not, so we've been joined. We've actually let her out of the production box. And to my left here, it's Brona, our lovely producer.
Hello, I'm free. I have been freed from the production box. Our resident rugby girl has gone travelling, so someone had to step up.
And who better to kind of talk about rugby for 40 minutes? And then to my right, we have a special super guest, and it's Kate Henshaw.
Hello, everyone. So excited to be here as a long-time Word on the Street listener.
Thank you. You may recognise her from doing the 5 at 5 and 6 at 6 with Matt Cooper. We're going to be hoping that there'll be some rugby news you can then talk to him about later this evening, maybe, because there's been a squad announcement late last night but early this morning for Ireland's game against New Zealand, and it's in the Nations Championship, and that's what we're going to talk about this week. I think if anyone who's listened to this podcast before knows, I'm not a particular rugby fan, but for this job I have to pay attention, and this tournament is something that has piqued my interest because it's a bit odd. So for anyone who doesn't know, Brona, could you please explain kind of the concept of this Nations Championship? It's a new tournament.
Yes, so it's basically replaced our summer and autumn tour, right? So you would have had just your summer tests. You maybe would have seen Ireland travel to South Africa to play 3 games against them and then come back. Pretty simple. Now it's this whole North versus South. We have to hate each other, everyone. Like, we can't
Northern Hemisphere versus Southern Hemisphere.
Northern Hemisphere versus Southern Hemisphere. So it's essentially the 6 nations of Europe. So that's England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, France and Italy play the 4 traditional southern powers, which is Argentina, New Zealand, Australia,
South Africa,
and then they've added Fiji and Japan. Japan being southern hemisphere is slightly dodgy. I believe they're on the north, but they're on the south for now. And we'll go over to the southern hemisphere now, play 3 games against them, and then they'll come back in the autumn. Then there's a grand final and a winner and a trophy at the end.
So it's all about kind of building excitement, making sure that more games mean more, sort of like the Nations League in soccer. Now, Kate, you're a traditional rugby fan. You'll watch kind of throughout the season, you'll watch Ireland. Is this tournament something that's been exciting to you so far? We've had a few games already.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. I'm not as excited as I would be going into like a Six Nations weekend, I think is fair to say. This tournament kind of just feels like formalizing something that was happening already with those traditional summer tours and adding more meaning to it, which is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. You know, everyone likes to compete in something where you get a shiny cup at the end. I think that's a human nature. But I suppose when I'm, you know, when it comes to the weekend, I'm not raring to go. I'm not thinking about, oh, I can't wait to watch Ireland play New Zealand this weekend. I'm not as excited as I maybe even expected myself to be. The traditional southern-northern hemisphere rivalry is something that I do buy into, though.
Really?
Yeah, I do buy into it. I don't know what it is. I think it's innate since I started watching rugby as a kid, because obviously there is huge rivalries within the northern hemisphere. And, you know, you think of rivalries like Ireland-England. A lot of the time, Irish fans would also support Scotland against England, or France have been so good in recent years as well and have caused the Irish rugby team so much pain. But there is this weird kind of we simply must be better than them attitude around northern versus southern hemisphere. And I think you do just have this absolute desire to beat them. But then am I going to shout for England over South Africa? It gets into the weeds there. Obviously, you always want your team to win. But I do buy into the rivalry. I do, because I suppose as well, because historically we have always been worse than the Southern Hemisphere teams. We've kind of caught up to them.
I mean, Ireland are playing New Zealand this weekend on Saturday, the early hours of Saturday morning. Well, actually not that early. It's like, what, 8 o'clock Irish time or something like that.
Not conducive to excitement either.
No, but when you think about the fixtures against New Zealand, it's not that often Ireland play them in a competitive environment compared to the Six Nations teams. Obviously, you play them every year. But I hadn't realised that no team had beaten New Zealand at Eden Park since something like the 90s. Like, it's been a really long time. So does this give a bit more of an opportunity to say, okay, there's a chance here that we can pull off something really big, but does it mean less that it's in this sort of, not made up tournament, but in something that's new? You're not beating them at Eden Park in, say, a World Cup.
Yeah, and I mean, whenever these things start, I mean, I'm sure this was the same conversation that happened when the Six Nations was new, and we've had various conversations about the structure of the Six Nations tournament over the years as well. You can't artificially attach meaning to a tournament when it's in the infancy, when it's in its infancy and when it's just starting. The summer tours, though, I would argue, always have meant quite a lot. I think of that South Africa tour a couple of years ago, which we ended up winning. And it was just such a big moment. That Kieran Frawley drop goal, two drop goals, literally in the dying moments of the game. So it's not to say that because they formalized it, these matches suddenly mean something. They've always meant something. And you always go and want to beat them. But the New Zealand game in particular is, because the All Blacks are the best team historically ever in rugby, it means more to beat them as well. So I am excited for the match on Saturday, but, you know, waking up at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning is not conducive to excitement either, because I'm sure a lot of people watching that match would rather be watching it in the pub with a few pints.
For sure. And I think I would like to come in there, because I think it being a tournament is not what takes away the excitement. We've kind of said that pretty much. What takes away the excitement is the format of it, for me. It's like, how many games in one day, starting at like 10 past 6?
Yeah, if you want to try and watch all of the nations play, it's a whole day endeavour.
Exactly. And like, in my house, for sure, it was a fight over, are we watching Wimbledon or are we watching England versus South Africa? And I lost, very much so. So I was watching England versus South Africa on my phone with Wimbledon on the TV, which, you know, that happens in a lot of houses with sport in the summer. But I think the way they've gone about it doesn't work. It's not a weekend of rugby, it's one day, and it's so compacted into this like 12 to 14 hour stint. Like, that's not a marathon. That is like, sorry, that's not a sprint. It's a marathon of rugby. And I'm not fit for it. As one of the biggest rugby fans, like, I am not fit for it. And some of it is some of the best rugby you'll ever watch. Like, these sides don't get to play each other as often as you would hope or would like, the biggest sides in the world of rugby. And I'm like sitting there like, God, I don't actually know if I can sit through another 80 minutes of this.
I think especially this summer. I mean, you mentioned we have Wimbledon on, we're coming to the tail end of the All-Ireland series, so there's, you know, people are out watching their GAA teams as opposed to, you know, watching the rugby. The World Cup is such a good example as well in soccer, and especially with the timings. If you were up late watching Argentina, Egypt, I don't know what game would have been on the Friday going into the Saturday, but if that went to extra time and penalties, suddenly you're up until 2 a.m. are you going to get up at 7 to watch a rugby match? I think timing-wise, it's just been a bit unfortunate that it happened to coincide with what is a really hectic summer of sport. I think if you're a huge rugby fan, maybe you'll commit to it. But if you're a casual rugby fan, there's just so much else to watch.
Yeah, there is. And you do have this. Both of those problems are extremely real in this situation. You have the whiplash of having so many games in one day where you're like, okay, I'm going to have to prioritise something here because I have a life and I have things to do. But then you also have your attention being pulled in so many different directions. Like, I'm a big tennis fan as well, and I probably would choose watching Wimbledon in the late stages over watching, you know, all of these rugby matches back to back to back. But we probably actually should be paying a bit more attention to this Nations Championship, because it is going to have massive implications for how we might be looking for the World Cup next year. That was part of the kind of reason and the justification for formalising these tours into an actual championship, because it'll give us a better idea of how we might do against the Southern Hemisphere teams once we get to the World Cup, which is Now it's 2027. It'll give these teams a chance to play each other and also a chance to kind of figure each other out. So I'm kind of telling myself off here. I'm like, fuck's sake, Kate, like pay more attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, get more excited, pay more attention. You know, maybe it'll help you manage your expectations about where we're at for 2027. But there's just so much on at the moment. And obviously we're coming into a World Cup final weekend as well. If you're setting time aside to do your washing, go out with your friends, go for coffee, do your weekend plans, are you really going to sacrifice watching the World Cup final to do that? Are you going to sacrifice watching the All-Irelands? It's such a big weekend for sport. It's really, really tough to choose. And when there hasn't been the hype created around this championship that there maybe should have been.
Do you think there'll be more interest in the reverse kind of three fixtures that will happen in the autumn when you have that final that's going to be on? It's in England, I think.
I think so. I think for sure. Like, I would definitely be someone looking to pick up a ticket maybe to those, but I probably would have done that for the autumn series anyway. I've been to a lot of autumn nations games. It's my favorite part of the year. I think I love the Six Nations for sure. I think second for me would be the autumn nations series. So that doesn't change for me. I'm like Kate, I'm trying to remind myself these points that we get or our rankings increase when we play these games count towards our seeding, counts towards how we're going to look coming into this World Cup. And I think I totally agree. Like, I should be a little bit more excited. I should be paying more attention. But I'm also like, I want to watch the World Cup final. The weather is beautiful. I don't want to lock myself inside all day on a Saturday. I just don't have the energy for it. And I think we've had two games kick off at 11 o'clock and our third one's at 8 a.m.
It's rough.
I don't want to be... It's my Saturday. Like, I want to sleep in.
It's okay if people want to lie in. That's also fine. But yeah, I'm kind of having a talk with myself.
It's interesting that you mentioned how, you know, Ireland should be, and Irish fans should be viewing this as, you know, how are we looking ahead of the World Cup next year? Because no team from the Northern Hemisphere has won the World Cup since 2003. That, of course, was England. And that's the only time a team from the Northern Hemisphere has won the World Cup. So it's...
Thank you for reminding me of that, Eve.
Apologies.
That hurts, Eve. That really, really hurts.
And when you look at the amount of rugby that's been on in the past while, I mean, the URC final was only last month, the Champions Cup not that long before that. You've had the Six Nations, and then you had the Autumn Series. Back last summer, you had an entire Lions tour. So not only for fans, is there a lot of other sports to watch. There was a lot of rugby to watch this year. But maybe even more so for players. There was a hell of a lot of rugby to play this year. So we wanted to get people's opinions both on the street, from in the studio, and then from ex-professionals. And so we're going to hear now from Fiona Hayes, former professional.
Friend of the show,
Fiona Hayes. And she sent us a voice note on how she feels that players might be fatigued from all this rugby that they're playing.
But on the other side of things, I'm not the one playing the rugby. So certainly for the players, it's becoming crazy, especially now that they've made a tournament out of the autumn and summer internationals. It's almost like teams are always going to be fully loaded trying to win it or trying to get to a final. So there's really no rest for a lot of players, especially the high profile ones and the superstars on the team. So really do feel for the players. Obviously they enjoy it, but I'm sure at this stage of the season all they want to do is relax and enjoy their summer. But yeah, certainly from a viewership and me, it's fine. But players, I feel so, so sorry for.
We've been joined by our resident rugby reporter, Darris McNaughton, in the table over there.
Hello. How are things?
Things are good. We just heard from Fiona Hayes there on the kind of player fatigue that may be happening with the amount of rugby that's being played this year and then going into a tournament where it's not just a tour of South Africa, it's a tour of you're crisscrossing the Southern Hemisphere and you're playing a lot of games in a lot of places. What do you think players are feeling about this new tournament?
Like I heard you talking there with Kate just a few minutes ago about this tournament just essentially replacing what was already there, and they've just slapped a name and a trophy on it. So I don't know if the players feel too much of a difference, but from my perspective, looking in anyway, like the 20th of June 2025 was the first Lions game last year against Argentina in Dublin. And so that's just over a year and a month, 13 months of pretty much straight rugby, because off the back of the Lions tour, you're probably looking at 2, maybe 3 weeks, and then you're back into training camp again for those players that are involved with their clubs. Then you go into pre-season, then you're back into URC, and then Champions Cup is starting, or Challenge Cup. And then, you know, international start there in November, and then in February with the Six Nations. So it is, it looks like non-stop rugby, and I think it's 5 weeks that World Rugby recommend each player gets of a holiday each year. Okay. Not convinced that's happening. I'm not going to speculate, but I don't know.
5 weeks there, yeah.
There's not a whole pile of room. So, and I think it tells, like, I have a long list of injuries here, and I'm not, you know, again, not speculating that this is anything to do with the amount of games they're playing. So players that might have been on this tour at the minute then in Australia and New Zealand with Ireland that are missing due to injury: Tommy O'Brien, Caelan Dorris, Andrew Porter, Paddy McCarthy, Jack Crowley, Ryan Baird, Robert Balakoon, who's suffered with his injuries. He's back again, but he had a hamstring injury while on tour. Mac Hansen, Shane Bolton, Jack Boyle, Edwin Odogbo, Tom Farrell, Calvin Nash, Cal Ford, Jude Postlewaith. So it's quite a long list of players, and some of those players are on the fringes and may not have made it, but that gives you a good idea of, you know, how much a toll some of these games may be taking on the players. So I don't know, like, we won't find out until we hear from the players themselves, so we can only speculate on these type of things, but it must be taxing. It must be taxing.
Yeah, I think for me, when I first heard about this new tournament that they were going to come in, I was expecting to see very young squads, new players that were unheard of, uncapped. I think we've seen a little bit of that, but probably not as much as I was expecting. I've seen most of the countries put out as good a squad as they can, essentially.
Yeah, like teams like France would book that trend, and they always have. They tend to leave off their...
The countries put out as good a squad as they can, essentially.
Yeah, like teams like France would book that trend, and they always have. They tend to leave off their some of their biggest players because of the top 14 and run so far into June. Like, so they left off a lot of Toulouse players and Montpellier players, and players tend to get a chance. Now, they went a bit stronger this year because it's a tournament, I presume, but generally they'd send out a B team to New Zealand. It's actually... That game 2 weeks ago between the two sides was the first we actually saw of a full strength France versus New Zealand team in the summer in a long, long time. But generally, yeah, like England are full strength. South Africa have the power to rotate, but they're not really losing much by rotating, because like it's something they practice throughout all their World Cup cycles. But we're different in that we can't really do that, because there's one side of it that we don't have a huge pool of players, but then if we do rotate and we do lose games, you know, the reaction to it is very
dramatic.
Reactionary.
I mean, Andy Farrell had, I think, is it 9 changes to his starting 15 from the last match to this one this weekend. Was that something that you were expecting?
Yeah, well, because last week was a fairly rotated squad from the week prior, and a lot of guys got a chance, the two front rows from Connacht, Sean Jansen, obviously, who's in this week's squad, and Bryn Ward all got their first caps. But then there was a few players thrown in there as well, like Stockdale, who isn't starting this week. Robbie Henshaw, 13. Gary Ringrose is back. So kind of, yeah, half would have expected that. But and like that always happens when a team like Japan is in those run of fixtures, you do tend to see a bit of rotation there. But I think some people would have liked to see a bit more rotation. I think that's just because... that comes down to maybe preferential biases or whatever else. And as an Ulster fan, I would have liked to see maybe Stockdale get another chance in the wing. But sure, look, that's a conversation for another day, I think. But yeah, like, I think Farrell has always been strong on the thing of, you know, we're not handing out caps here. That's not what we do in Ireland. We're going to, you know, you have to earn your caps. Anyone that plays for Ireland has earned that opportunity. So, and again, we don't really have the pool of players to be flipping the whole team upside down like South Africa can and New Zealand can when these run of fixtures come around.
We've seen Maro Toje has been rested now because of such a crazy season with Saracens. He's been rested by England. It seems to be like he's burning out. Like, is there anyone else you would have heard of or you have noticed missing for maybe a similar reason across any of the nations?
I think Atoja is an interesting case and quite a unique one in that he's had a very taxing run at it physically, because he had the Lions tour and he captained the Lions tour as well, which comes with its own duties, and you're there involved with it long before the rest of the players are. And then obviously he's captain of England, so he has that on his plate, and I think he is still captain of Saracens, maybe Jamie George is, but he's definitely a leader in that team, so he's had so much on his plate, and he plays, you know, he generally does play 80 minutes as well in a game. But then he had decided the emotional side, where he lost his mum during the season last season as well, so I think a lot of people were calling for him to just be stood down for a little while and give him a bit of rest and give him a chance to recuperate. And because, not that his performances were dropping, but he probably wasn't playing to the level that we've come to expect of him. So I don't know if I've seen other examples of that. I would look at players maybe in the Ireland squad like Tyburn, who, you know, have played a lot in that Lions tour last year and have been such a key player for their club. Him down with Munster, like, there was a run of games there. I don't want to put a number on it, but there was a good few weeks where he was playing 80 minutes after 80 minutes after 80 minutes. You're like, oh my God, this guy's... And he's switching between positions as well, and he's captain on the side. You're like, this has to be taking a toll on him.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
That's where I want to throw to... We had a voice note in from Grace Davitt, former Ireland international, and she was kind of talking about, is there too much rugby happening?
How are the players going to manage with it after this Nations Cup? And, you know, you're into then autumn internationals. Will they get a bit of a break before that? A bit of rotation in squad. But, you know, they're all still fighting for a jersey, which is brilliant. You know, you've seen the likes of Henshaw and stuff coming back in after injury and getting that opportunity to play rugby. We've seen Frawley there against Japan. So it is great to see different guys get putting their hand up, and obviously they're all fighting for that jersey against New Zealand then this weekend. So I'm sure the bodies are tired for a lot of those Irish players, but they really want to finish this tournament on a high.
I think, like Dara, you mentioned, we won't see the knock-on effect to this until maybe the domestic season starts back again. I think are we expecting to see knock-on of the World Cup? I've just taken South Africa as a example here. After the test against England, Scotland, Wales, they fly to Buenos Aires for a once-off against Argentina. Then the fourth test greatest rivalry series kicks off in August. And after playing Australia in Perth in September, they'll head to Europe for Four Nations Championship in November. Like, we would have seen a reduced or shortened season in the lead-up to a World Cup normally. But in 2027, the Boks will play six rugby championship matches before turning their attention to Australia. And, like, in the meantime, the URC is still going on in the background. Like, I think the knock-on we see could actually continue on over into the World Cup in 2027.
Yeah, that was a conversation then in South Africa as well, that they would pull their South African teams out of the Champions Cup because there was just too much going on, and the schedule is essentially 12 months for some players. Now, again, their player pool is massive, and Razi Erasmus and his coaching team there have done an absolutely amazing job at being able to rotate that team. And, like, you watched them play, who did they play last weekend? I'm forgotten now. But whoever they played, they played a third team, essentially. And you wouldn't know. If you were a casual rugby fan, you knew about the Springboks and being this big entity and this you know, the World Cup favourite again to go back to back to back. You think, yeah, that looks about right. They're pretty dominant in this game. It was Scotland, sorry. I just remembered.
Scotland, yeah.
And they beat them well. And that was a pretty decent Scotland performance as well. And, you know, they're missing maybe 10 players in that squad. And you're like, oh, God. So maybe it's a less of an issue with South Africa because they have that depth. And not just they have the depth, but they've put it into practice as well. And those players are international rugby ready. So I don't know. It's hard to know, like, listen to Grace Davitt there with Ireland and players getting rotated and stuff like that. Some of it can probably be done a little bit better, but some of it is by necessity. Like, you look at a guy like James Gibson Park, who, again, played on that Lions tour, has been a key cog for Leinster, does get rested a bit for Leinster because they have the capacity to do that with their depth. But for Ireland, he's just absolutely crucial. Like, we're a different team without him. Craig Casey's a guy who probably hasn't kicked on too much over the last couple of years. Nathan Doak is only starting out as an international, so they can't really throw him in there and play 60, 70 minutes in test rugby. So a guy like him, Andy Farrell probably feels like he can't drop him in these big games. You need him there. And so that there's a couple of issues there, you know, in terms of, you know, he is 33, I think, or 34 now. So at some point you do need to bring someone else through. But there's also the thing of that he's a 33-year-old rugby player that's playing, you know, 70, 80 minutes in big games. He played 80 minutes against against Australia. And that's extremely rare in modern rugby if you're nine to stay on for the whole game, because you have someone on the bench. Craig Casey was on the bench, but he wasn't used.
Is he suffering from just how good he is? You know, being indispensable?
Pretty much. Yeah. Because he's a rare case in modern rugby that the keys of the attack have been given to him, you know, that he's kind of the base of everything we do. So when he comes off or when he's not playing, we do look slightly different. It's a weird one to get around, because rugby's in a place where it needs to be marketed better, and to market something better, you probably need more of it and it being out there, and you need bigger games and you need them more often. Because there was conversations, I think it was pre-2023, that we don't see enough of Ireland versus South Africa. We don't see enough of Ireland versus New Zealand. Now that we've got it, it's like, oh shit, we've too many games. It's hard to find that balance.
Do you think it takes away from the like huge deal it is to go and play South Africa in South Africa if we're doing it all the time? Do you think it takes away from it?
Of course it does. But how do you get around that then? Like, because then you have the other side complaining again that we're not playing them enough, but then the allure of the occasion falls away a little bit.
It kind of reminds me of when UEFA tried to bring in the Super League, and it was like, we're going to see Man United playing Real Madrid so often, but it means a bit more when they're drawn against each other in the Champions League than if they're playing each other kind of consistently.
Yeah. It's pretty much the exact same thing. Mm. I'll never get tired of watching Ireland versus South Africa personally. I'll never get tired of watching Ireland versus New Zealand. We play England every year, at least once a year, and it's as exciting every time it rolls around, each time for me.
And this is what was interesting. We also had a voice note in from Andy Dunn, friend of the show as well.
Friend of the show.
Yeah.
And he was talking about not the player fatigue element of this new tournament, but the fan fatigue.
The seasons are endless, it seems. I actually think there's a bigger impact currently on fans' fatigue, tracking new tournaments, tracking complexities within tournaments, and obviously there's a huge amount of sport going on now at the moment in Ireland, between the All Ireland Championships, Wimbledon, the golf, and then the rugby. So there's a huge amount of crossover. So I think there's more of an element of fan fatigue. I think a lot of the top professionals, certainly within Ireland, the top professionals in rugby are being periodically managed throughout seasons. Their total game count has been managed. Their total energy expenditure has been well managed. So overall, I think the issue is probably a bit of fan fatigue with information overload, and that's normal in all walks of life at the moment.
Normal in all walks of life. Thanks, Andy. This is something that I feel quite passionately about. I am like information overload, reboot, crash out, dead. Like, that's how I feel at the minute. I think like we're in the absolute heat of the GAA season. The minute we've got a hurling All-Ireland final, and then the week after we've got a football All-Ireland final. We have the World Cup final
this Sunday.
Weekend. We had Wimbledon, you know, for the last couple of weeks.
The LGFA coming up and the Camogie as well.
We've had F1, British Grand Prix on. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the year-round sort of schedule overload.
Yes.
And then you throw in, like, it's at least six games or five games, rugby games on the same day.
I'd be stressed about rugby becoming more like the direction that soccer is going into. If you look at, obviously, there's the World Cup this summer, the expanded tournament, we all knew there was going to be
104. Did you watch all 104 games, Eve?
I did not.
How many do you reckon you watched?
Very few. Because I work evenings, so I'd only watch them if I'm in the office. And I think that's the issue for so many people who maybe work odd shifts. It's so difficult to catch them all when the timings are wrong. But the thing about soccer now is that you have the World Cup this summer. Last summer, you had the Club World Cup. So say any Chelsea player or any Man City player who was in that tournament, if they're also in their national team tournament, that's two straight years you're playing through the summer. The summer before that was the Euros, so you're playing through that again. It's this constant element of there's always football on. I mean, I think it's well established. I'm a Tottenham fan, and also was shouting for England last night against Argentina because I would have family from there. And so
I'm not going to say anything.
It's okay. But I remember the England match ended, they lost, and I was going, okay, when is club football back? When am I going to be able to watch Tottenham again? And I realised that the first pre-season friendly is on Wednesday, is next week.
Oh my God, that's scary.
So it really is this 12-month long thing. And for football slash soccer is a very different sport to rugby. I think the toll that a rugby match will take on a player's body is why we have to be careful about this, player fatigue. And then also for fans, I mean, there is so much more to watch now. Yes, with this expanded football season, I think the way that now the GAA seasons are done, where you have the whole summer dedicated to inter-county and then the club starting in September and everything, things are more spread out now and there's more of it. There's more choice. And there, I mean, if you look at even the way that you can watch games on the TV now, there's so many, you need so many different channels and sites and subscriptions to watch.
Don't even get me started.
It feels like it's more of a commitment to be a fan now than ever before.
Absolutely. For me, like in the usual run-up to, say, a Six Nations, I will clear the calendar at the weekends. I'm dedicated, I'm locked in, I'm probably in the pub. But now, for the Nations Championship, I couldn't even tell you the fixtures, who we're playing or what time without... Like, if you see my Google search history, it's just Nations Championship fixtures. What time is Ireland playing New Zealand this? And then you realise it's 8 o'clock in the morning.
I think it suffers from the same problem as this World Cup, in that it's... And listen, it's not suited for maybe European audiences, and we can't always complain about that.
Yeah.
You know, time zones mean that they will suit more countries, some countries more than others. But I worry that the Nations Championship might be deemed initially as failing slightly if their viewership figures aren't great or anything like that. But it's just such an unfortunate time of year and time of day for Irish fans. What will be interesting for me to see is in the autumn, when you have the finals and everything like that, what the interest will be then. I reckon it will be a lot higher.
You would hope so. I have a little bit of a stat for you here, Eve.
Perfect.
A UK YouGov survey recorded that 11% of the British population expressed direct intent to view the tournament's opening weekend fixtures. 11% is not a lot of people.
It seems low for an opening weekend. I would imagine, you know, that would be one that would get the most attention.
And that was South Africa.
Wow, that's a big game.
You know, I have a couple other little comments here for you. I might read some of them out. I'm not really invested in it. There's so much more other sport at this time of the year. It feels odd to need to dedicate time to rugby midsummer, and I was only at the Prem final a couple of weeks ago. This is a good one that I like. I'm not really arsed about international rugby at all at the moment. Probably because England are effing boring. I'd rather watch Fiji. Give me that chaotic, expansive running rugby over endless, tedious box kicking any day. Then there's another one here that says, I think as a concept, it can do really well, but it must integrate promotion and relegation for it to be worthwhile and incentivize unions. Otherwise, there's nothing really at stake. And I did a lot of Googling about this when it first became a thing. Mm-hmm. And I believe there was plan for it to have two leagues and there to be promotion and relegation. You would have your tier one countries and your tier two countries. That hasn't come to fruition.
So apparently there will be promotion and relegation for the start of the third edition of this Nations Championship in 2030.
That's a long, long way away.
It's a long way for there to be little consequences for teams. It's what I struggle with sometimes with American sports, where you don't have promotion and relegation to a lower league. The stakes, to me at least, appear lower. I think what the big teams are doing this year, it's what you alluded to earlier, are using this as a practice ground for the World Cup in 27. I want to play another clip here, which is, again, from Fiona Hayes. And she is talking about fan fatigue, but she's very much in favour of this Nations Championship.
Well, to be honest, for me, there definitely is no such thing as too much rugby. I'd watch rugby all day, every day. There's never too much rugby for me, but I'm obsessed. I think chatting to other people as well on the outside, probably season ends with the natural season ending, which is the URC, the top 14, all those tournaments kind of finish May, June. So for it to be dragged out even more, especially in Ireland. I think people's minds focus to county, to GAA, and now at the minute, I suppose the soccer World Cup is on as well. So you can see that a lot of the fans probably were looking for the time to switch off from rugby and then have it back again in August, September, like the usual. So yeah, I think there is a bit of fatigue around it, but for me, I'm absolutely loving it. Even if there's weeks off, I'm counting down the days. So I'm enjoying the Nation Championship, and to be fair, the standard of rugby has been quite good. Defensively, teams have been exploited, but a lot of tries have been scored, and just in general, I've enjoyed the games.
It was nice to hear Fiona speak positively there about it. She's obviously enjoying it, so great for her, and I get where she's coming from. You know, if you're a diehard absolute, we'll lock yourself in a windowless room with you and your TV. It's absolutely fantastic for you. I maybe haven't quite reached that level just yet, but who knows? Give me another few years. Maybe by the next Nations Championship, I will be locking myself in my room. Yeah.
And I think what better way for our last clip than to actually talk to a fan about family? This is from Stephen, who we were chatting to in Stephen's Green this morning.
And then even for fans, is there just too much rugby to watch nowadays?
No, I wouldn't say there's too much to watch. Sport seems to be kind of moving to like a full year's kind of thing generally. So yeah, not too much, but once the safety of players is kept in check, that's important.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the main point. If sport is becoming a full year thing, we just need to make sure that it's becoming a full year thing in a way that is not detrimental to players' health.
If the players are safe and if they're enjoying and happy, then I guess the rest of us can enjoy it and be happy too. I thought it was interesting when he said, I wouldn't let my kid do it. I think that's a funny quote, because I probably wouldn't let my kid do it either. I wouldn't want my kid doing that much rugby, would you?
It's a lot of sports.
Physical.
It's a lot of physical action for a really long time of the year. And I think, you know, you have safeguards now put in place for in terms of tackling and rugby for kids. Young kids playing football are not allowed now to head the ball until a certain age, just because we know now the consequences of stuff like that. So we're definitely entering into a new era, I think, of sports. We've seen it happen in the last 2 years. It's going to only continue. But before we leave today, we want kind of our Braeburn hot take. We want the word in the studio. So we've had a 40-minute discussion about all of this, Brona. Have you made up your mind? Do you think that the Nations Championship is something that is a net positive for rugby?
I think at the end of the day, when you look at everything we've discussed in here, it has to be seen as a positive. I think at the end of the day, more games, more competition, more jeopardy, and better sides to play against are always a positive. It's whether the players are feeling the same or not. That's always the question, right?
I think it is. I think for me, the concept of an Ireland-New Zealand game is something that doesn't come around too often. It's something that I'll be excited to throw an eye over on Saturday. And that's coming from someone who wouldn't maybe ordinarily watch rugby to the extent that yourself or Dara or Kate would. So you've got me in your claws, Nations Championship.
I've converted you.
Yes. So, listen, I'll be interested to see. Hopefully Eden Park's going to be a difficult ground to go to, but Andy Farrell's squad's looking good. Here's hoping. So word on the street, on off the ball, is with Braeburn. From refreshing iced mochas to smooth iced oat lattes, whatever the weather, Braeburn Coffee has you covered, made for your summer. We'll be back next week. Thank you very much.
Word on the street, on off the ball,
with Braeburn. Whatever the weather, Braeburn Coffee has you covered.
Made for your summer.
Hello, hello, and welcome along to Word on the Street, Da Classica.
There we go. It's way better.
I will preface this by saying I was in the throes of a fever.
Well, I was thinking it's like the death of football, funeral bell.
This is probably the worst recency bias of all time.
I say Boxing Day.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Is there a problem? Absolutely. Is it shite? Absolutely. Will you watch it? Absolutely.